There's mummies and dummies and ghosts that bark. There's goblins and ghoulies that wait in the dark. If you wish to wet your pants with fright, listen to Gaxy on Goosebumps tonight.
I'm gonna come.
Boo, my dudes, and welcome back to Gaxy on Goosebumps, the only podcast in which I read and review every single Goosebumps book from R.L. Stine's original series. And today, let's get invisible. I want to get invisible. Let me see your body. Not. Yes, it's Goosebumps number 6. Let's get invisible. And while I can't confirm that R.L. Stine derived the entire plot based on the title, which he changed from the Olivia Newton-John song title, Let's Get Physical. Come on. This book was first released in March 1993, at a time in which A Whole New World, the theme to Aladdin, topped the Billboard charts, and the most recent Simpsons episode was the season 4 episode Last Exit to Springfield, otherwise known as the episode in which Homer becomes the trade union leader at the power plant. Dental plan, Lisa needs braces, dental plan, Lisa needs braces. You'll remember it very fondly. The classic Tim Jacobus cover art features a young boy, presumably Max Thompson, the protagonist, in front of a mirror, and his mirror's reflection, actually, he is shown to be slowly fading away. It's a bit understated, I've got to say. It's beautiful, but it's the invisibility effect is actually quite subtle. And actually, looking at it now, it's quite subtly done, the way in which the background is shown to be displaying through the character. So it's a very, very subtle invisible effect there. But as a result, it doesn't really... You know, I know, I'm not gonna criticize. I think it draws you in enough to keep you interested. Curiously, the mirror featured on the front cover has a spider web, a prominent spider web, and a spider in the top right corner. And Tim Jacobus has gone on record saying he never drew the spider web as part of it, and they don't know who put the spider web on. And when the book was re-released in 2003, the spider web was gone. Some interesting trivia there for you. Well, it's trivia for you. The tagline is, now you see him, now you don't. Perfectly acceptable. And the blurb reads as follows. Disappearances can be deadly. Not sure what that's meant to be a play on words of. Maybe it's just the alliteration of D in disappearance and deadly. Regardless. On Max's birthday, he finds a sort of magic mirror in the attic. It can make him become invisible. This is me editorializing. That's quite understated. That's two quite interesting statements to start off with, neither of which feature an exclamation mark. On Max's birthday, he finds a sort of magic mirror in the attic. It can make him become invisible. So Max and his friends start playing Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Until Max realizes he's losing control, staying invisible a little too long, having a harder and harder time coming back. Getting invisible is turning into a very dangerous game. The next time Max gets invisible, will it be... forever? To briefly summarize the plot. I say briefly, I don't know how long I'm going to go on for. I haven't really scripted it, just sort of rambling. Our characters, Max, our protagonist. His younger brother, Noe. Noe? His younger brother, that's what happens when I don't script it. His younger brother, Noah, who is called Lefty because he's, get this, left-handed. How did they come up with that one? April, Zach, and Aaron. Essentially, during Max's party, or his birthday party, they discover, a magic mirror in a room in the attic. And how this mirror works is you pull a chain, and it's got a light attached to the top of the mirror. The light turns on. Whoever's standing in front of the mirror becomes invisible. And you pull the chain to return visible again. And so Max, his brother Noah, / Lefty, and his friends, are obviously very interested in this. And over the next coming days, they keep going back and trying it out. And eventually it becomes a bit of a contest. Who can stay invisible the longest? Which is all fun and games, but as the blurb would let you know, the longer you stay invisible, sort of the longer it takes for you to turn visible again. And the side effects sort of are described as the longer you stay invisible, you sort of get lightheaded, you feel far away, you feel quite faint. It's conveyed as some sort of almost dreamlike state, or like being underwater. Eventually, during this contest, Zach and Erin, who have gone invisible, encourage Max to go invisible again to try and beat their record, or beat their time of being invisible. Max is a bit hesitant, but I guess he's also competitive, so he agrees to do it. He's got really bad feelings about this at this stage. We don't get a lot of hijinks, invisible hijinks, which you think you probably would get in a story where these protagonists come invisible. We have some scenes of invisible tomfoolery, but mostly it is localized in that small room in the attic, which as a criticism does make it feel a little bit repetitive. It's like, oh, they're in the room again, they're going invisible again. They don't really do a whole lot with the invisible concept. Anyway, during this contest, Zach and Erin, who've had their turn to go invisible, encourage Max to go invisible. And he has his reservations at this stage. He's got a really bad feeling about the mirror, but he does it to sort of shut them up. And he stays there longer and longer and longer. And he finds himself in this, I guess, mirror world. Anyway, during this contest, Zach and Erin, who have already sort of had their turn at being invisible, encourage Max to go invisible again and try and quote-unquote beat their record. And Max has got bad feelings at this stage. He's got bad vibes from the mirror. Because everything seems a little bit off about his friends now that they've had their time being invisible. It's all a bit sus, but they sort of half taunt him into doing it, half force him into essentially becoming invisible again. And the light at the top of the mirror gets brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. He's feeling more further and further away. He's having trouble seeing everybody. This real underwater dreamlike feeling kicks in. And suddenly he encounters his reflection, essentially. He's sort of come into the mirror world, if you like. And his reflection says, essentially, yeah, I've already changed with Zach and Erin. They've changed their reflections. They didn't struggle very much. It's kind of odd. And now, Max, I'm going to take your spot in the real world. And Max manages to get away from his reflection. I don't want to say evil reflection. I'll get onto that in a second. But he manages to get away from his reflection. Gets forced back in by reflection Zach and Erin, who are in the real world now. And it's only because Lefty throws a softball at the mirror that it cracks and essentially everything. The mirror smashes, everything returns to normal. Or does it? Lefty is seen at the end throwing with his right hand, even though he's Lefty, implying that Lefty actually is still the reflection version. A few questions might have arisen during that explanation. And I'll try to address those as necessary. One thing I did find quite humorous reading as an adult is when you read enough of these children's books, you keep an eye out for things that are designed to play into the twist, or the information that's just adding colour to the story and the information that's going to come in handy. So, of course, instantly on page 2, you know, Max's brother is established as being left-handed, and Zach has a cool hairstyle, which is swept to one side, and he's got an earring on one side. So it's like, it's all very asymmetrical, which makes it possible to determine who's the reflection version when they get sucked into that mirror. Overall, I really like the mirror concept and how it's sort of conveyed, and sort of the switching, you know, the way you sort of gradually, the longer you stay, you sort of move into this mirror zone. It's not like a sucking thing. It sucks you in. It sort of, it immerses you. And I think that is really written quite well. The underwater dreamlike feeling that the characters experience, I think is really, really written quite well by Stein in this occasion. I could really feel sort of Max being trapped and feeling like he's fading away almost. Written very well. I also appreciate that Stein avoids the temptation he gave in to in both Say Cheers and Die and Monster Blood, which is to have this central object that causes these things to happen and have to find a need to explain why it exists. In Monster Blood, you can't just have this goo that keeps growing. It has to be a curse from a witch that's also a cat. And in Say Cheese and Die, it's this camera that was invented by a mad scientist with his partner. I think with these magic things, just make them, don't explain it. It's just there. No one knows. It doesn't have to have an explanation for it. I think it's better when it's just something evil that exists. I don't need an origin story. So I really appreciate that that was actually not explained in the book. Actually, we go as far as Max goes as so far as to ask that, which you probably would. And he's talking with his reflection. Whose mirror is it? Who built it? I demanded. He shrugged. How should I know? I'm only your reflection, remember? I love that. What's the story behind the mirror? I don't know. I guess want a bit more clarity about what these reflections are. It's mentioned that the reflections are the cold side, but it's only really mentioned once. Their motivation is not really clear, like, how they work. I guess it can be, I'm possibly reading too much into it. It's just their reflections and they want to not be reflections anymore. They're not really like evil. Not really, but then they all sort of do work together. Like, when Zack and Aaron have changed to their reflection, they physically try and force Max to switch as well. So they're working together, but to what end, I don't know. Are they going to try and get everybody, in the house and then the world to look in the mirror and switch? Also, I do like that the story ends with Noah, Lefty, seeing Max's reflection in the mirror as he walks into the room, thinking it's the real Max and chucking him a softball and accidentally smashing the mirror. Because it was established that he was throwing the ball in the house earlier in the story. Chekhov's gun, I believe that technique is called. Or if you like, Stein's softball. So I like that that was, set up and, it's sort of thematic that he mistook the reflection for the real thing. But then it's revealed that that Lefty had already made the switch as well. He was already swapped in the mirror. That was, revealed. He was acting strange as well. He was throwing with his right hand. And it's shown that he's still doing that at the end of the book. So why wasn't Lefty trying to help push Max into the mirror as well? Does he not work with Zack and Aaron's shadow versions? Reflection versions? I don't know. This is applying quite a severe level of scrutiny to a children's book called Let's Get Invisible. But I do like my resolutions watertight. I like my motivations clear. There are some just quirky, funny moments in the book as well. Early on, Max reveals that he really has great hair. His brother Lefty is messing up his hair. My brother is always on my case about my hair. He gives me a hard time because I spend so much time in front of the mirror brushing it and checking it out. The thing is, I just happen to have great hair. It's very thick and sort of a golden brown, and just a little bit wavy. My hair is my best feature, so I like to make sure it looks okay. Respect. I love that. Like, good on you, man. Like, don't... Yeah, you have great hair. Like, fucking own it. Don't be ashamed of that. Like, don't... No false modesty. It's a good feature. You should be proud of it. Amen. I know. I thought it was a bit of body positivity for young Max there. It's sort of a bit of a breakup between these mirror scenes. We do have a short scene in which Max and Lefty's grandparents come over to visit. And this has no real bearing on the plot whatsoever. It's just sort of like a bit of a deviation, something to stop them from looking at the mirror and going and playing with the mirror. But the grandparents are just absolute fucking pieces of shit, to be honest. I could see that my grandparents and parents were already sitting at the dining room table. Grammy and Poppy liked to eat promptly. If their dinner came 1 minute late, it made them real cranky for the rest of the day. I'll read on. Your soup must be ice cold by now, Grammy said, clicking her tongue. Nothing I hate more than cold soup. I mean, what's the point of having soup if it isn't steaming hot? It tastes okay, I said, taking a spoonful. We had some delicious cold soup last summer, Poppy said. He loved to contradict Grammy and start arguments with her. Strawberry soup, remember? You wouldn't want that hot, would you? It wasn't strawberry, Grammy told him, frowning. It wasn't even soup. It was some kind of fancy yogurt. No, it wasn't, Poppy insisted. It was definitely cold soup. You're wrong, as usual, Grammy snapped. This could get ugly, I thought. Yeah, no kidding. And I thought that was funny. I thought it was funny because that's that's an example of adding colour. It's not something that has any bearing on the plot whatsoever. This is a bit of colour for the story, but it also made me a little bit anxious. Like, these grandparents are freaking horrible. Made me feel very blessed to have had the relationships with my grandparents that I did, who, at least in front of their family, never got cranky if their food was late, like toddlers, and never deliberately started arguments with one another like toddlers. We also do get some very 90s pop culture references. The friends do discuss the implications of the mirror, and you know, someone, I think Max does mention that, you know, it will be taken away for science experiments. Again, sort of speculating on that, that's fine. They don't provide a definitive answer in the story, which I think is the correct option. But they say they could possibly mention it in the science fair at their school. Erin comments, the prize is a silver trophy and a gift certificate at Video World, remember? Do I remember Video World? I don't. I presume it's some sort of entertainment store. And Erin, later in the same page, says, our picture would be in People magazine and everything. Video stores and print media. God, I miss the 90s. Overall, I think it's a very solid and very enjoyable Goosebumps book. There is a slow sort of revelation about the dangers of this mirror. I think it's a quite a good concept, and it's simply explained. It doesn't dramatically change or get too convoluted in terms of resolution or, again, explanations about what this mirror is. It just is a magic mirror. I'm fine with it. It does lose points for, I guess, a bit of that repetition. There isn't a lot of breaks from being in that same small room in front of that mirror. And again, the invisibility concept, you think about, you know, characters going invisible, all the hijinks that could happen. There is some, there's not a whole lot. Bit of a wasted opportunity, as they do spend most of the time in the attic. However, I do think it is, as I said, very solid, very consistent, and on my Goosebumps scale, in which 5 is a perfect Goosebumps book and 1 is a terrible Goosebumps book, I give this 4 skeleton faces out of 5 skeleton faces.
Damn it, Stein, you've done it again.
Another job well done.
Now, in the interest of producing a more rounded review, I would like to, and I will, because this is a one-man show, I'm essentially my own boss, mention briefly the television adaption of these stories, if they got one, and Let's Get Invisible did. Season 2, Episode 13, directed by Ron Oliver, who is one of the more prolific Goosebumps directors. A lot of the fat is trimmed from the story. There is no birthday party scene at the start. And the character of April is completely ditched, which I think is perfectly fine. It does have some of the same flaws, in which, by which I mean very much a lack of variety in the sets. But the way the mirror world is conveyed is, I think, quite artistically satisfying. It's sort of really quite good the way they can convey this mirror world through a lot of blue lighting and sort of, it's a very blue sort of area. It does have the added aspect that when the characters are going invisible, rather than feeling lightheaded, which is sort of the symptom described in the book, it's that they feel cold to the extent that when Max comes out, I think he's like shivering and got like frost all over him. So I guess it's like a cold world, which again is referenced in the original book. Max's reflection says, I'm the colder version of you. So I guess they took that idea and ran with it. And I think it would be quite a spooky one. I think Goosebumps episodes can either be on the spooky side or the goofy side. And it would be spooky, except when Max is trying to escape the mirror world, we get a lot of random objects flying across the screen, sort of meant to represent, I don't know, sort of a twisted reality that he's in. So there's I think there's like a rocking horse and a clock coming across the screen in very, very 90s, which is to say, not terribly well-aged visual effects. It's very reminiscent of the opening to The Twilight Zone, the black and white one, if you've ever seen that, with just like objects flying through to denote it's a strange world that's been entered. I do wonder if that was a deliberate choice from Mr. Oliver. I'm sure he is a massive Twilight Zone fan. So that's the only thing that would make you go, this is silly. You know, I think a lot of these episodes you can watch and be like, oh, I may not be scared as an adult, but like, I appreciate what they're going for. I think that part there with those visual effects. Yeah, I think that sort of kicks into goofy territory. But you know what? Still a very, very enjoyable episode. And that's all for this episode. Please join me next time, in which I discuss Goosebumps number 7, Night of the Living Dummy. As always, though, thank you so much for listening, and please stay spooky.